Major funding for Election 2016 AETN debates is provided by AARP Arkansas.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Steve Barnes. Welcome to the second night of Debate Week here on the Arkansas Educational Television Network, AETN. Tonight, the race for Congress in Arkansas's 1st District. The candidates in alphabetical order, Rick Crawford of Jonesboro, the incumbent and Republican nominee, and Mark West of Oil Trough, the Libertarian Party's nominee. The candidates will be questioned tonight by a panel of Arkansas journalists. George Jarrett of Talk Business and Politics, Tom Henry of the Blytheville Courier News, and Jonathan Reeves of KASU. Each candidate will have 2 minutes for an opening statement. Each will have 2 minutes and 50 seconds to respond to a question, while rebuttals are limited to 1 minute. At the conclusion of tonight's appearance, each candidate will have 2 minutes for a closing statement. And, of course, the order of opening statements, questioning, rebuttals, and closing statements was determined prior to the broadcast by a coin toss in which the candidates or their representatives participated. Our timekeeper tonight is Cindy Gamble of AETN. And with that, our first opening statement tonight, Mr. Crawford.
Thank you, Steve. Let me say thank you to you and to AETN, to our panelists of journalists. But one point I want to make, and you shared this with us before the broadcast, the news about Senator David Pryor having suffered a stroke. Let me just offer my sincere best wishes to the family, to Senator David Pryor, to Senator Mark Pryor. Certainly our thoughts and prayers are with you at this difficult time, and we're thinking of you. You know, we're going to talk a lot today throughout the debate about political ideologies and policy points and things like this, and you're going to see a difference in positions. You're going to compare and contrast on your own and make a determination of who you think is best suited to represent you in Arkansas. I've been proud to do that for the last 6 years now, finishing my third term and seeking a fourth. But I think we need to probably get a little better understanding of what it is a representative does. Certainly we represent you in Washington, but it's much, much bigger than that. We do so much work here to change lives at home. For example, if you are a woman whose veteran father is struggling to find a VA bed, we help you with that. We have done. If you're a mother of a child with autism who is struggling to get disability and help for that child, we help with that. If you're a farmer who's had a contract issue with the USDA over a CSP, Conservation Stewardship Program, we help with that. Any federal agency, we intercede on your behalf. We are the buffer between you and the federal government, sometimes the conduit between you and the federal government. It's important to know that what a representative's job is certainly to represent you in Washington, but we advocate for you on behalf of the constituents here, and I'd be honored to have your vote for a fourth term.
Mr. Crawford, thank you. Mr. West.
I'd like to begin by thanking AETN and UCA for hosting this debate and putting everything together. I want to thank Steve for moderating, Jonathan, Tom, George. I want to thank you guys for the questions you put together that are going to help us deal with Arkansas issues. I also want to extend my condolences to the Pryor family. That's a tough situation to deal with, and I'll be praying for you. I want to also thank those of you that are watching at home. You've had a hard day at work. You've come home. You're wrestling with kids, trying to get dinner together, and yet tonight you've chosen to stop and watch this debate and engage the political process. I applaud you for that, and I hope that tonight Congressman Crawford and myself give you the information you need so that when you go to the polls, you can make the decision that's best for you and the decision that you feel is best for Arkansas and for your country. The reason I've chosen to run is I believe that what happens in D.C. so often is Congress gets away from its focus on what we the people are looking for. 90% of us believe that Congress is doing a bad job as far as handling the federal government itself. I applaud Congressman Crawford for what he's done as far as constituent services, and members of Congress do that all over the country, and I applaud all of them for that. That's a lot of hard work, takes time and dedication. But what we need to do is begin working together, and when we work together, we can get the government out of business. We need to end the atmosphere of overregulation, of high taxes that are strangling small businesses and that are killing jobs. We've got to get business out of government. Crony capitalism is killing Washington. We have politicians, special interests, and lobbyists using our tax dollars to buy influence, and that's wrong, and it needs to stop. But finally, we need to fight together for the minority of the individual, which is the greatest minority in America. And when we stand together as individuals and stop one person's rights from being violated, we are protecting our own rights as well. So I hope that tonight you will see that there is a clear difference between the two of us, and you'll have enough to decide on when you go vote.
All right, Mr. West, thank you very much. Our first question tonight is from George Jarrett, and it goes first to Mr. Crawford.
Congressman, Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump admits in a tape that he groped and grabbed women by their genitals. His admission meets the felony standard of sexual assault in the state of Arkansas. You said this weekend that you still support Mr. Trump and you will vote for the GOP ticket. Congressman, will you vote for Donald Trump in November? And if you do, how will you explain that to your female constituency in the 1st District?
Well, you know what? I'm a husband and a father. And so those comments certainly do concern me, no question about it. The real sad state of affairs here is I've indicated to you I'm going to continue to support the Republican ticket. But the saddest part about this is that in spite of all the things that Donald Trump has done or is accused of having done, he's still a better choice than Hillary Clinton. So I'm going to continue to support the Republican ticket because we cannot afford to allow Hillary Clinton to occupy the White House and impose her agenda on the United States of America. We've seen that under President Obama. This will be a continuation of that agenda, if not even worse than we've seen. She's already disclosed through the leaked emails that she supports open borders, that she would like to see a common market in our hemisphere, that it just totally inconsistent with American principles and American values. And we know what she would do in regard to support appointing Supreme Court justices. So no, we cannot afford Hillary Clinton as president. And for that reason, I'm going to continue to support the Republican ticket.
All right, Mr. West, 2 minutes.
Well, I'd like to say when I look to my right, I see Congressman Crawford. I don't see Donald Trump. Congressman Crawford isn't Donald Trump. Now, I am disappointed that he's going to continue to push the myth that there's only two choices in the presidential race. There are other parties. Gary Johnson, the Libertarian candidate for president, is on the ballot in all 50 states. He is a man of character, a man of honor. And unfortunately, when you look at Secretary Clinton or you look at Donald Trump, you don't see the character that represents the values that make America what we are, make America this diverse, dynamic, and amazing people. Character has to matter. Donald Trump's statements were disgusting. They were predatory. They are statements that don't belong in a locker room, much less coming out of the mouth of someone that will eventually run for president of the United States. I teach my daughter to avoid guys that talk like this. I teach my sons not to become men who say these type of things. And I pray daily that they avoid those type of people when they go out into this world, when they operate in this country. However, what we need to get back to and what we need to understand is character matters. And the Republicans like to throw the myth of the Supreme Court and how pro-life will never end. And I'm a Christian. I'm pro-life. And the one thing that bothers me is seeing so many Christians lose their faith over character. I'm sorry, but my God is bigger than the Supreme Court. My God is bigger than the president. I don't need a president or a Supreme Court to see the culture of life promoted in America. That's something I do every day. Every time I preach a sermon in my church, every time I work in my community, when I minister with a woman who is struggling with that choice when she's in a crisis pregnancy and needs help. Those are things we can do locally when we promote adoption and make private adoption easier. Those are ways we can end abortion without having to have anybody on the Supreme Court or in the White House.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Crawford, 1 minute.
Well, I do agree character counts, and I don't think being a character necessarily equates to having character. And so the character of Gary Johnson, the CEO of a marijuana company, is that somebody we want to elevate to the office of President of the United States? Do we want to elevate someone to elected office who's been endorsed by an individual who's a fleeing fugitive on charges of murder? Character does count in who you associate yourself with. I'm not compelled to vote for Gary Johnson because of the statements that Mr. Trump made. And I do think it matters that we prevent Hillary Clinton from ascending to the office of presidency. It absolutely does matter. But as I said, Gary Johnson offers nothing to compel me to vote for him just because he was a former Republican who has chosen to be a libertarian and espouses the policies of social liberal policies but fiscal conservatism. That's trying to have it both ways. You're either conservative or you're not, and this is an idea to placate both sides.
Thank you, sir. Next question is from Tom Henry, and it goes first to Mr. West.
Mr. West, your party's candidate for president, Gary Johnson, seems to have little or no working knowledge of the humanitarian crisis in Aleppo. And when asked to name a single foreign leader that he respected, he could not name one. Will you vote for him in November? And if yes, how can you support a candidate that has no working knowledge of foreign affairs when the office of president is our ambassador to the world?
Yes, Tom, thank you for the question. And it's a pertinent question. I do want to say, yes, I will be voting for Gary Johnson when I go to the polls in November. Because the problem that we have in America is we have this two-party concept, and we want to fuss about the problems in Washington and what fosters and what creates a system where we have Hillary Clinton as one choice with her character flaws and Donald Trump as the other choice with his character flaws. It's a two-party system that actively works to keep any other voices from getting into the game, keep any other voices from the stage. So yes, I will support Gary Johnson. And admittedly, Gary Johnson should have done better on the Aleppo question. I know what Aleppo is. I understand the humanitarian situation there. I've seen the refugee camps and the tents all over the Middle East where these refugees are fleeing. But the problem is they're fleeing from our foreign policy. We have an interventionist foreign policy that needs to stop. We think that every time there's a regime in the world that we disagree with, that somehow or another we should go change that regime. We try to find some human rights cause to get boots on the ground, and that's easy for some president who's never served to do. But when you've had family, when you've had friends that have served in the military, those decisions need to come before Congress where you have people who have served in the military, where you have people whose families are affected directly by decisions to go into combat overseas. And as far as foreign leaders, I can't think of a single foreign leader I respect, because every foreign leader in this world uses the power of the state to abuse their citizens in one way, shape, form, or another, including our current president and presidents before them, and both candidates for the Republicans and the Democrats also want to use the power of the state to enforce and impose their will on people, to defy individual rights. So yes, I will proudly support Gary Johnson, because we need a difference in America. We need to make a radical change from where we're going. Two-thirds of the country believes we're headed the wrong direction, and the only way to stop it is to vote differently.
All right, sir. Mr. Crawford, 2 minutes.
Well, I'm having a hard time reconciling that statement with reality, because if every world leader is corrupt and abusive of their people, then by extension, Gary Johnson would be more of the same. Certainly, there are world leaders out there who are worthy of respect. Theresa May comes to mind, most recently elevated to Prime Minister in Great Britain, United Kingdom. These blanket statements that nobody in the world is worthy of respect, I don't think those are appropriate. And I do think that you ought to be able to name a few world leaders if you purport to be President of the United States. I think that's essential. Nothing that Gary Johnson says, why would we trade as Mr. West indicated, we've got two bad, flawed characters. We're all flawed characters. You know, we're a fallen people. Why do we want to just introduce Gary Johnson as an alternative when he's absolutely no better and is not in any position? If you look at his poll numbers, there's a reason for his poll numbers. I just think that's a ridiculous notion that somehow Gary Johnson, of all the world leaders on the stage, he would be the only choice that we can make that wouldn't abuse the citizens of his own nation if, according to Mr. West, every public servant essentially is an abuser of their constituents. I think that's entirely inconsistent and inaccurate.
Mr. West, 1 minute for rebuttal.
Speaking of inconsistent and inaccurate, Congressman Crawford said you're either conservative or you're not. That tells me he doesn't understand politics, because there's a whole other wing, a whole other view of how government should operate called libertarianism. We believe in the non-aggression principle, which means that you don't aggress against someone else unless they are a threat to you, a threat to your property, or a threat to your life. what Congress does through taxation, through regulation. They get into business. They get into people's business. They get into people's lives, and they impact people. And they do so at the will of a president. Whatever that president says, they go, they enforce it, they do it. And in order to have the power of the sword, that comes with respect. I respect international leaders for the fact that they have the power of the sword. What I don't respect is the fact that so many of them use the power of the sword against their own citizens, whether it is through prison, whether it is through deaths in the streets. There are so many different ways that Gary Johnson represents the libertarian philosophy, which says that the authority we are putting in our central government is bad for us. It attacks our rights, it attacks our liberties, and we deserve better.
Mr. West, thank you. Jonathan Reeves has a question. It goes first to Mr. Crawford.
Mr. Crawford, Arkansas farmers have been facing numerous challenges in the 1st Congressional District. As you know, a lot of rural crops are grown in the district, such as rice, soybeans, and wheat. If you're reelected, you would have a part in working on a new farm bill. So the question to you is, what's the role of the federal government when it comes to agriculture, and what would you like to see in a new farm bill?
Well, you know, there are so many people that, Jonathan, that talk about, you know, the role of the federal government with regard to agriculture. Now, first off, let me say that food security is paramount to the United States from a national security perspective. It's absolutely imperative that we be able to feed and clothe ourselves and not be reliant on other nations to do so. So the government is going to continue to play a role in developing policy that affects that. What that role is should be minimized. As I talk to farmers across the district, they'll tell you that, look, we want to operate in the context of a free market, but one doesn't exist for farmers. Inherently risky, they're price takers, they're not price makers, they have very little control over policy, and they have very little control over trade, and all they're asking for is a fair shot. Until they receive that fair shot, unfortunately, we're going to have to continue to implement policy that provides a level of support, a safety net to a certain degree. However, we can use some private sector tools to affect that. One of the things that I've been working on, for example, is incentivizing farmers to fund their own disaster relief in times, as you've seen, along the Black River, and an untimely fall rain where we lost over 40,000 acres, and they're not going to get that back. There's no opportunity to replant because it's harvest time. If we had those type of programs in place, farmers could effectively fund their own disaster relief until such time as other relief is available. And it could mean the difference between them being in business and not being in business next year. What I want to see is flexibility from the ag lenders who have the opportunity to carry farmers in times of trouble like we're seeing right now. Under Dodd-Frank, they can't do that. They no longer have the discretion to allow them to make interest payments to stay current. They just have to default, or in some cases, they'll go into bankruptcy. We need to protect our farmers because it's in our national security interest to do so, but we need to encourage the use of private sector and free market tools to affect that.
Mr. West.
Congressman Crawford stated that food security is something that we need to focus on. It's something that we need to protect. And I agree, food security is important. But what Congressman betrays to us in what he says is that he doesn't really believe that farmers are capable of managing their own farms. He believes that small farmers need the federal government to tell them what prices they should do, tell them who they should trade with, tell them what seeds to buy, when they should plant, when they should harvest, tell them what to do with leftover seeds they have at the end of the year. This is not the place of the central government, and that's what we have, is the central planning of agriculture. We have a central planning that robs small farmers of the freedom and the liberty they need to make money. There are so many small farmers I pastor in a small farm community. Many of you may not have ever heard of Oil Trough, but it's a community of small farmers, small family farms, and they're struggling. They struggle because the way regulations work, the way this farm bill works, doesn't benefit them. This farm bill does like every other bill that comes through Congress. It says, hey, we're the government and we're here to help. Well, we all know what Ronald Reagan said about that, and Congressman Crawford apparently believes he's here with the government and he's here to help, which is completely against anything Ronald Reagan would have ever supported. This farm bill, just like so much legislation that comes out of Washington, is nothing more than a bait and switch. We'll give you this, but we'll take that. We'll give you this food security, but we're going to take the right to do with your farm what you choose. We're going to hand a little subsidy here, whether it's farmer's insurance, but we're going to control how you can buy your insurance and what it can pay. And so often it falls so short. So then he comes up with this deal where it's like, well, hey, we'll set up a plan where farmers can save money and they can put money back tax-free. But I'm sure it will come with its own limits and it'll have its own restrictions on where you can put that money, how you can save it. Everything from the government comes with strings attached. I'm tired of hearing, I'm here from the government and I'm here to help.
Mr. Crawford, 1 minute, sir.
Well, I'm not here from the government, but I am here to help. And what Mr. West betrays to us is his complete and total ignorance of how agriculture works in this country. The government doesn't tell farmers what seed to buy, where to buy it, and how to plant it. Farmers have control of how to operate their farms. And it just amazes me that he can live in the first district of Arkansas and know so little about agriculture, which is the number one driver of our economy in the state of Arkansas. Absolutely amazing that he hasn't done more homework on that. And also to completely take liberty with my positions on agriculture and what I've done for farmers in concert with farmers. I have an ag advisory council of row crop producers and livestock producers. I've been a practitioner of agriculture. I've been a communicator in the ag industry. I built an ag network that spanned 5 states and 53 radio stations. I know what it's like to make a payroll, unlike my challenger. So I know what it's like to sign the front side of a paycheck, just like farmers do. So I think that's the difference here, is I actually know how agriculture works, and I'm not reading talking points off the Libertarian website.
Our question now for Mr. West, Mr. Jarrett.
Mr. West, healthcare costs are exploding across the country. Hillary Clinton has promised to modify the Affordable Care Act, commonly referred to as Obamacare. Donald Trump has promised to repeal it. Please, in specific terms, how do we need to deal with this healthcare crisis in our country?
Thank you for the question. Healthcare is a very important issue and it affects a lot of people in our country. Apparently, yes. Congressman Crawford didn't do his homework either. I worked for a company for the last 9 years, and what I do is manage payroll, make sure my employees all over the country get paid. We run operations in several states all over this nation, and I make sure every week they get their paycheck. So Congressman Crawford needs a little bit of research himself rather than sit here and try to make his little talking points about me being a libertarian just because he likes to tell you what to do with your life. I'm sorry that's the way he feels. As far as healthcare is concerned, I agree with Bill Clinton. He said the other day that it is the craziest thing in the world that people work 40, 60 hours a week. And what they have seen is their rates have doubled, but their coverage has been cut in half, while we're covering 25 million more Americans. I believe, and I agree with Donald Trump on this, that we should repeal Obamacare. However, when we repeal Obamacare, we also need to work to repeal any other types of regulation that are in the market that are preventing people from getting the care they need, because the whole issue is access. We have a very closed market. It's not a free market. People can't get the access, and that's why the need and the desire and the want for Obamacare came about. That's what it arose from. However, I do find it ridiculous that Congress spent so much time this last session and the session before sending Obamacare repeal to a president that they knew was going to veto it. It seems to me like it's more playing games, spending our tax money, fighting over something that they already know the outcome. They already knew President Obama was going to veto it. So we needed other ways. And I applaud congressmen that did try to find other ways, like Senator Cruz tried to find an end around. Senator Rubio tried to find an end around. We need to be active in trying to defeat Obamacare, but at the same time, we've got to remember that there are systematic problems that Obamacare was designed to address.
Mr. Crawford.
Well, Obamacare is an utter disaster. No question about that. I think we can all agree on that point. What do we do in the absence of Obamacare? It's not enough to repeal it, we have to come up with a replacement. Unfortunately, the American people have been conditioned to expect a package deal. But that package deal should consist of a few key elements, one of which is tort reform. The other is taking down barriers to state-to-state competition, allowing portability and how we define what exactly portability is between employers. Because at the key, the heart of this matter, really comes down to creditable coverage when you're talking about the pre-existing conditions. And one of the big arguments that was made for implementing Obamacare was that folks with pre-existing conditions couldn't get coverage. Well, there's a reason they couldn't get coverage. When you leave one employer and go to another, there's a gap in that coverage, and if you don't maintain creditable coverage, one option is omnibus, or COBRA, Consolidated Omnibus Budget Reconciliation Act. The COBRA coverage that you maintain between employers is cost prohibitive. Most people would have to choose to make their mortgage payment or their health care payments. That's not a way to cover people. So if you implement portability between employers, allow that policy to be under the ownership of the employer, or the employee rather, when he leaves employer A and goes to employer B, he takes that policy with him or her until such time as he can get into open enrollment in the new employer he becomes eligible or she becomes eligible for coverage under that new employer. But the key is creditable coverage and portability between employers, competition from state to state, and for all intent and purposes, we know that we need to have tort reform to push back against this practicing of defensive medicine, which is running costs through the roof. Doctors are, you know, having to perform unnecessary procedures and tests just to prevent being sued in the process of caring for their patients, and that's just unacceptable.
Mr. West, 1 minute.
I agree with Congressman Crawford that there is a lot of unnecessary cost in the healthcare system, and tort reform is one way to begin addressing some of that cost. I do agree with those needs. But we do also need to get away from the systematic understanding that somehow or another our employer should be the one providing our health care. I'm sorry, I believe in you. I believe that you're able to figure these things out for yourself. If you're smart enough to get a job and hold a job and pay your bills, then I think you're smart enough to decide what's best for your health care, what's best for your health care insurance. You shouldn't have to depend on your employer for that. We need to end this system, and it's a design. It's a design by people in D.C. because they want you to feel like you need them to help you. They need you to feel like you need them to step in and fix things. Well, let's fix this and let's quit making people depend on their employers for health insurance. This gets us back. This whole Obamacare is in place because John Roberts made sure the Supreme Court passed it. That was one of those GOP nominees, and they're going to trust those nominees with trying to end Roe v. Wade, and they can't even handle health care.
All right, Tom Henry, question first for Mr. Crawford.
Congressman, returning to President Reagan's quote that the 9 most terrifying words are, "I'm from the government and I'm here to help." Both of you say the size of government is too big and the deficit too large. What are you willing right now to seriously and not in words only pledge to eliminate from the federal government if elected in November?
Well, I would be willing to support a hiring freeze. I think we can achieve major savings in the federal budget by not hiring when an employee retires, not rehiring, refilling that position. I think that's a reasonable approach to step one, and then getting a full account. We need to audit every federal agency, and unfortunately there are a whole lot of federal agencies out there that have been passed over from that requirement. For example, the Pentagon. The Pentagon is not sacrosanct in this issue. However, every year in the NDAA, the National Defense Authorization Act, there is a provision in there requiring them to prepare for an audit, but invariably there is an amendment that's put in place that basically extends that date so they are prevented from being subject to audit. These are the kinds of things that we need to do to kind of ferret out fraud, waste, and abuse. It's rampant in virtually every federal agency. So I don't know that it's fair or appropriate to target specific agencies in the federal government for closure immediately without having a full account of what needs to be done. And then there's the other argument that, well, you need to run in there and cut across the board. Across the board cuts are irresponsible, and I've learned that basically what you do if you do an across the board cut, you're maybe making a deep cut in one agency that really can't sustain it, that may be a valuable service that they're providing, and letting other agencies off scot-free that should have a deeper cut or discontinuation. So you have to get a full account of exactly what federal agencies are doing. But I think at the very least, we could implement a hiring freeze and achieve great savings in the federal budget just through attrition. And then you'll achieve a smaller government as you see the workforce decrease in size over time. Now, granted, that's not going to be the immediate solution of closing down agencies, as my opponent suggested, that we just get the government out of business completely. That's probably a little irresponsible and not the appropriate approach.
All right. 2 minutes, Mr. West.
Yes, as far as dealing with the size of government, there are a lot of unnecessary and unconstitutional things that our government does, and we need to begin cutting those. We need to, through an audit process, I agree with that, we need an audit process. Maybe if we were able to audit the Pentagon like we should be able to, we wouldn't have lost $6.5 trillion. When you're looking at a national debt of $19 trillion, $6.5 trillion could go a long way to keeping that debt from exploding. I think one quick budget cut we can make is decide that it's time to end all of our wars of intervention and our wars of regime change and bring our troops home. Most estimates show that it costs about $2 million a soldier to keep a soldier deployed overseas. That's a huge amount of cost when all we're doing is creating this never-ending cycle of warfare. We started in Afghanistan, then we crept over into Iraq, and now we've crept into Africa, in Libya, Egypt, and then we crept into Yemen, and now we're creeping into Syria. When do we stop creeping and say enough is enough? The blood of our soldiers is enough. We had a problem. 9/11 happened. We all know what happened. Osama bin Laden is dead. Now, because his terrorists are able to stretch everywhere, how far are we willing to stretch to catch terrorists? Terrorists can be anywhere. Are we going to go to war in Germany because the Syrian refugees are there and there may be terrorists among the Syrian refugees? I think that we are very irresponsible with how we're handling our international policy on war and on conflict, and our foreign policy is atrocious. It is killing people. We're drone bombing innocent children. That's sad. How can we say we're a country that values life when we drone bomb innocent children overseas? This stuff has to stop. We have got to end this, and this will help cut our budget. We can also deal with other departments, like the Department of Education. That's a duplicative agency. We have Department of Education on the state level. We have school boards. That can be handled locally.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Crawford, 1 minute.
I don't have anything to follow with that.
All right, our next question comes from Mr. Reeves, and it goes first to Mr. West.
Mr. West, a lot of people have been concerned about national security and keeping America safe from threats such as ISIS. How concerned should we be about terrorist cells cropping up here in Arkansas, and what would you do to keep us safe?
Well, the first thing I would do is dispel the rumor that somehow or another the government can keep you safe. We have this, again, this is this mindset that Washington pushes, that D.C. politicians push, that we need the government to keep us safe, that we can't secure ourselves. If the government would leave us and our guns and our gun ownership rights alone, we could keep ourselves safe. We, you know, Arkansas is one of those states where you can have an open carry. That's a great thing. That is a good method of crime prevention. If you have people with guns, you can help meet people who are going to try to commit terrorist activities with guns. Everybody wants to make the new boogeyman. The boogeyman was Al-Qaeda. It was terrorists running the streets. Again, we have ISIS and it's terrorists in the streets. What's the next one going to be? Every time we turn around, the government invents another boogeyman that suddenly we have to be afraid of, and we have to cower and accept whatever the government tells us. So what the government has done is, in the name of terrorism, they've been spying on your email. I don't know if you guys caught the story this week, but Yahoo has been spying on your email and giving that information to your federal government. Is that really what we want America to be? Congressman Crawford supported CISPO, which allows that to happen. We have a government that has decided that somehow or another you can't secure yourself. You are not good enough to be your own person. You're not smart enough to handle things, so we need them there to handle stuff for us. We need them there to tell us how best to live our lives, even if that means intruding in our laptops, intruding into our email. We don't need that government intrusion. I don't need the government listening when I talk to my wife on the cell phone. I don't know about you, but we have some kind of private conversations on the cell phone that I don't want the government privy to. We need to allow people the ability to secure themselves and renew the belief in everyone that we can secure ourselves. Another thing would help is if Donald Trump and the Republicans would quit bashing all the Muslims. Muslims are a safety net, and Muslims can help us find ISIS terrorist cells in our country, but they're scared to talk to us because they're scared what's going to happen to them if they do.
Mr. West, thank you. Mr. Crawford, 2 minutes.
Well, let me go back to 9/11. We do have problems here in the United States. 9/11 is obviously the worst attack that's taken place on soil, but it wasn't designed to be the worst attack. It succeeded beyond their wildest expectations. They did not expect to kill 3,000 plus Americans. They expected to target Americans and to create havoc, and they did, but it was much more successful than they had anticipated. What they're engaged in now are the attacks like we've seen in Orlando and San Bernardino and Nice and Paris. And they're invested in continuing those types of attacks because they don't cost anything. A guy in Nice jumped in a truck and he killed 80 plus people in one fell swoop. That's creating terror and making people feel unsafe in their homes. Now, open carry will not address the global terror threat. I'm not saying that I'm against open carry. I'm just saying that when you're telling the citizens of the First District of Arkansas that the federal government has no role in protecting them, that's irresponsible. That's a constitutional mandate that we provide for the common defense. It's exactly what we're supposed to do. And I would a lot rather fight terrorists off our shores than on our shores. Now, I'm, you know, when Thomas Jefferson took on the pirates along the Barbary Coast, I'm sure that there were folks that viewed that as a debacle. But he was borne out later to be absolutely appropriate in that, in securing those trade routes and standing up for American sovereignty and protecting American interests. We can't retreat to the cocoon of our shores and our borders and pretend that nothing going on in the world is ever going to touch us because we have folks at home that can take care of themselves. Folks can take care of themselves. The Second Amendment provides them that opportunity, but not everybody can. But it is the government's responsibility to provide that standing army and provide for the common defense. And I think it's naive to think that we can just retreat to home and start stand and watch on our own homes.
All right, sir. Mr. West, 1 minute.
Yeah, Congressman Crawford mentions Orlando and San Bernardino and Nisi. And these were all had, they all had one thing in common. You had some guy, homegrown guy, who was a lone wolf, who acted on his own. This is why it's so important that we have a good relationship with the Muslim community. We've got to stop insulting them. We've got to stop acting like somehow our country is at war with every Muslim that lives here. Because if we're going to stop homegrown terrorism, if we are going to infiltrate and find people that might be getting off into something like this, we're going to be depending on the Muslim community to help us find people that are doing that. Just this week over in Germany, the Syrian refugees, there were two Syrian refugees that found a guy that was plotting to do just that. They took him and they took him to the police. That's how we stop homegrown terrorism. We don't stop homegrown terrorism by trying to chase terrorists in holes and caves all over the world. It's irresponsible to do that, and we need to bring ourselves back and we need to refocus on keeping America safe.
George Jared, question first for Mr. Crawford.
Yes, Congressman. There is a humanitarian crisis, obviously, that has erupted in Aleppo. ISIS is in Syria and Iraq. The Assad regime that controls most of Syria is becoming extremely friendly with Vladimir Putin and the Russian government. Should the U.S. government send troops to Syria, and would you support such a move?
Well, it would depend on the nature of what they were being sent there to do and what the levels were and what the responsibility, what the rules of engagement were. To issue a blanket statement to say I support troops in Syria, I couldn't answer that question definitively. But what I would say is that had the United States been present, had we secured a status of forces agreement before leaving that vacuum for ISIS to form, we would have been in much better shape in the Middle East and it would have been a much more stable environment. However, that's water under the bridge. We can't go back and relive that or change that. So what we have to do is look forward. The Syrian refugee crisis is a crisis, but it should be addressed through safe zones in that region for a variety of reasons. And the money that we invest in relocating Syrian refugees could just as easily be put into safe zones in their own areas, closer to their own areas, so they can maintain a cultural balance and not have the difficulties of assimilating into a culture they're not familiar with, and then they can be a part of affecting change in that region, because if everybody just leaves, how are they going to go back home and affect that positively on their own behalf? Yes, we should be there. Here's what happens when the United States is not leading. Doesn't mean we're taking point on everything, but we have to have a presence, and we have to show that we're willing to help. The fact of the matter is that should be a Sunni-led coalition, and the Americans, United States troops in small numbers should be there to provide support. But we don't lead, bad things happen. Voids invariably lead to things that are not good for our nation, whether it's in the military or whether it's in trade deals and global commerce, whatever. The United States should take a leadership role. It's not about trying to go out and dictate policies globally. It's just about going out and advocating for our interests. And look, liberty is not the exclusive purview of the United States. The United States has done more to ensure and provide liberty to people, oppressed people around the world, than any other country in history.
Mr. West, 2 minutes.
I believe that we can advocate for American interests without having to be militarily involved everywhere there are American interests. And that is one of the differences between Congressman Crawford and myself. When we look at Syria, we see a situation that the international community desperately needs to be involved in. And we look at Europe, and Europe is getting involved by taking in refugees, finding ways to help those refugees become a part of their society. Now, I know that most of the refugees, especially if you go and visit the camps, I've heard congressmen talk about it, and they have said that those refugees want to go home. The problem is right now there isn't a home. I don't know if any of you guys have watched the coverage or have Googled on the internet the pictures of the cities there in Syria where they have fled from. There is nowhere to go home. Most estimates are that there are more than 6 million people dispossessed within Syria by itself, added to the 4 million people that have already fled for their lives because they have nobody fighting for them. Now, what we see in Syria is the outflow of everything we've been doing internationally. You see, we had a problem with Osama bin Laden, and we chased him to Afghanistan. Well, then we decided we had a problem with Iraq, so we crept into Iraq. Well, we got out of Iraq irresponsibly, and what happened? ISIS fills the void. Now ISIS is taking territory over there. They're moving into Syria. And what's happened? Russia has stepped in. Russia has stepped in on the side of Assad, and 99% of the times that they bomb, they're bombing people that would be rebels, people that we would be supporting over there. You see, what the American people don't see is Russia wants Syria to be the next proxy war with America. They weren't satisfied with the proxy war in Afghanistan so many years ago because, in case you didn't know it, we've been interfering in the Middle East for longer than since before 2001. And Russia just wants another proxy war that they think they'll win this time. So they're trying to provoke. Iran is trying to provoke us in Yemen with the Houthi. We need to stop giving in to every provocation and begin bringing these war decisions to Congress where they belong.
Mr. Crawford, 1 minute.
Well, again, I think Mr. West shows a real lack of knowledge on these international affairs. And it's sad that we have a candidate that's running for Congress that is so willing to join the Obama chorus of blame America first. I don't think that's necessary. We don't owe anybody any apologies. As I've said before, the United States has been invested in liberating oppressed people everywhere. In fact, the United States Army Green Berets, if you look closely at the flash on that Green Beret, you'll notice the crest pin there, and it says, Depresso Liber, to free the oppressed. That's not just a motto. That's something that they do. That's something they're committed to. That's something that is the American spirit, that we provide liberty not only here at home, but we help oppressed people achieve liberty as well. So we're going to turn a blind eye on that and pretend that those that ISIS forces are not burning Christians and Muslims and Jews and anybody else that stands in their way. We're going to continue to just, well, we'll just go home and everything will be fine. No, we're going to have to play a role there in some capacity. We need to fill a void that exists in that area.
Tom Henry, question first for Mr. West.
There was a time when cotton was king and some individuals on the Arkansas Delta prospered greatly. Times have changed, and while we have some corporate interest prospering in the Arkansas Delta, like the steel industry in Mississippi County, honestly, the Arkansas Delta is known more for its poverty. What are you going to do to guarantee that new, good-paying jobs come to the Delta if you are elected?
Well, the first thing I want to do, as I've committed before, is we're going to get the debt under control. And I'm not a part of an Obama chorus that blames America first. We talk about the oppressed people in Syria, but then we ignore the oppressed people in Africa and the oppressed people in China because we do business in those places, so we're good there. In order to deal with poverty in the Delta region, we've got to address the Delta region as it is, its own region. We have a poverty problem that is also an education problem. The education system is failing to prepare people in the Delta region for the jobs that are available in the Delta region. If you talk to manufacturers in that region, they have jobs. They just don't have people to take those jobs. So we need to close that gap in education. Our education system needs to work to where we can train people in high school for the jobs that are available on the market in the area where they live. My son has decided he wants to be a welder when he grows up. That's a great trait to have. You can make a lot of money as a welder, and a lot of people don't know that. The business I work in is a construction business. We put people to work that do welding, that do pipe fitting, that do a variety of interesting jobs that a lot of people don't know because our education system trains people for college when we need to be training people for the jobs that are available. And that is the primary way that I would deal with poverty is education. We have to make sure education prepares people for the jobs that are available in their area. Now, also dealing with poverty, we need to get past this viewpoint that, you know, somehow or another, people are poor because they choose to be. Now, mind you, we can't ignore that there is some generational poverty out there. We have to work to break that mindset of generational poverty. And we don't do it by continuing to pour more in and continue to be the government here to help when really all we're doing is creating a festering wound. And that festering wound is what is leading to part of the Delta poverty problem.
2 minutes, Mr. Crawford.
Thank you. We do have an issue with workforce education, certainly, but all up and down the Delta, we have really some really good vocational education systems in place. ASU Mid-South, Arkansas Northeastern College, East Arkansas Community College, Phillips Community College. They're doing everything they can to bridge that gap. I assembled a group of advisors called the Delta Regional Economic Advancement Mission, or the DREAM Council, that is comprised of community leaders basically from Mississippi County all the way down the Delta, all the way down to Chico County, and brought them together so that we could discuss what do we do to empower the Delta. And after two or three meetings, this group organically developed the idea and recognized that what's lacking is not the workforce education as much as the soft skills that you can't teach. Those soft skills in the workplace that really model good behavior in the workforce, implement work ethics. That's important. Instilling value in a day's work. Those are things that in many cases aren't being modeled to our young people. So you can give them the technical knowledge, but if they're not equipped with the soft skills to be successful in the workplace, we're going to continue to see this plight of poverty in the Delta region. These community leaders recognize that, and we're working together to effect that solution. And guess what? Not spending a thin dime of federal government money to do it. This is an organic movement that's taking place as an advisory council that was brought together in our office to serve the constituents in the first district, particularly in the Delta region. And we have another one of those advisory councils over in the Ozark region. And they took a look at their particular issue, and they decided that it was infrastructure investment that was impeding their economic growth there with respect to highways, where it's difficult, for example, to even pass on a hilly, curvy road. Things like that that make it difficult for businesses to thrive. So we're looking for private sector solutions and individuals to come together and create that.
Mr. West, 1 minute.
Yeah, I'm not sure if Congressman Crawford's aware of it, but the DREAM is a libertarian concept. That is what libertarians would like to do to deal with poverty all over the country, is to set up things like that to help the community itself solve the poverty issue. We, again, have so many solutions that come from D.C. They're top-down solutions that we need to stop engaging in. And things like the DREAM are one way that we can get the community involved and have communities solve the poverty problem. D.C. can't solve the poverty problem. People working locally can. The same thing goes with education. D.C. can't solve the education problem, but teachers, gifted teachers and instructors, people on the local level, parents, they're the ones that can solve the education problem. I don't know if he meant to, but he did. He gave you a libertarian solution for fighting poverty in the Delta.
Our next question goes first to Mr. Crawford, Mr. Reeves.
Going back to agriculture, Mr. Crawford, there's been a push to get more agricultural products open to American-based and Arkansas-based goods. One of those markets has been Cuba. Mm-hmm. So give us a plan as to when all of those restrictions of the Cuban embargo will be lifted.
Well, you know, it's hard to speculate on exactly when there'll be a wholesale repeal of the current posture regarding Cuba. I think it's important to note that one of the biggest impediments from our perspective, Arkansas, this district, is home to half of the U.S. rice production. It's important that we have global market access. Cuba is one of those. It's not the silver bullet, but it's considerable, and it's so close to us that we would benefit almost immediately. And the only impediment to that right now, we can sell rice in Cuba, but we have to sell in cash. What we're seeking to do right now is an incremental approach that leads us to a long-term strategic solution on how we deal with Cuba. But that first step is to relieve that, or to lift that restriction on cash only, and allow for U.S. entities to engage in transactions with Cuba through credit. Now, those credit extensions are not going to be at taxpayer expense. These are strictly private sector transactions. We're closer now than we have been probably in the last 50 years to actually seeing this come to fruition. I've worked very, very hard on implementing this ag trade legislation, the authorization to lift that statute that prevents U.S. entities from engaging in credit transactions with Cuban entities. And I think that would have a huge impact on not only helping U.S. producers, but also, again, filling a void in Cuba, a void of leadership that right now is being filled as we speak with nations like Russia, Iran, and China. So I think it's important to know that we need to quit viewing Cuba through the lens of the Cold War and start waking up to the realities that it's in our strategic interests and our economic interest to readjust our posture with Cuba.
2 minutes, Mr. West.
Yeah, and I agree with Congressman Crawford on how we approach Cuba. Unfortunately, he's going to have a fight with his presidential candidate if Donald Trump does get elected to office, because he has shown very clearly that he's not going to have that kind of trade with that kind of country. But Cuba is a market that we need to open up to. The agricultural community in the First District is booming, and it would be a great investment of our community to be able to trade there. I know that there's a plan in place right now, and I cannot think of the name of it, where they're trying to set up for these small farmers to have access to the Cuban markets through bigger agricultural companies. So this trade is something that we definitely need to open up, and I believe that opening Cuban trade will be great for Arkansas's First District.
Mr. Crawford.
Nothing further.
All right, our next question then comes first from our... I'm sorry. I wish we had time for one more statement, or one more question, but evidently we don't. Again, according to the flip of a coin prior to the broadcast tonight, our first closing statement tonight comes from Mr. Crawford.
Well, thank you again for the opportunity and to our panel. Great questions. I enjoyed this, and I do think that you've seen quite a contrast in what we view as the responsibility of a representative in the first congressional district. Certainly it's to try to reflect the wishes of the first congressional district. And it's not just about voters. It's about citizens, the constituents of this district. There are some 750,000 residents in the first district, give or take a few. But it's important to note that we owe them our best effort in keeping them secure. And when I hear libertarians talk about how we need to retreat to the shores of our home and make this cocoon of security, and we're going to arm everybody and let them be responsible for their own defense. Look, some people are. I can defend my home. I believe in the Second Amendment. And I'm sure Mr. West can defend his home if necessary. But not everybody can. And it's entirely constitutional that we maintain a standing army and that we provide for the common defense. That's without question. The idea that somehow if we don't engage overseas that the problems will not come to our shores is intensely naive, to say the least. We're going to have these problems because this is the world we live in. I wish I had better news on that front, but the world is on fire. We're trying to put some water on it and try to make things better, but we don't need to compound the problem by pretending that those problems don't exist. I think the first step in solving a problem is recognizing that it exists. And these problems exist, and they are a threat to us, a very real threat, and they're not going to go away just by us pulling up stakes and coming home, because we haven't, and my opponent has not articulated a clear plan on just how we do that to affect security here at home, other than to let citizens be solely responsible for their own home defense. And I think that's entirely irresponsible. And that's probably one of the sharpest contrasts you see between my challenger and myself.
Mr. Crawford, thank you. Mr. West.
I'd like you to take a moment and imagine. When you get up in the morning, what is the first thing that comes to your mind? When you roll out of bed, do you wonder if you've paid enough of your fair share of taxes? As you're brushing your teeth, are you trying to invent some new and innovative way for the government to get involved in your life? If you're like me, I'm pretty sure those things aren't what you're thinking about. You're hoping that when you drive to work, your job will still be there. You're praying that what you put together this week to pay bills will actually meet the need. You're trying desperately to keep a roof over your head, clothes on your back, and food on the table. If you're like me, you're working 40, 60 hours a week. I work two jobs. Just trying to make ends meet. We're just regular, ordinary people trying to make ends meet. But I want to tell you something. I know what you need. You need a government that stays out of your way so you can be successful. You need a government that's smaller and less expensive, and you need a congressman who will fight for all of your rights, not just some of them. Now, what we can do together. I believe in you. You see, you just heard Congressman Crawford. He said he doesn't believe in you. He said he believes you need him in your life. I don't believe you need me, and I don't believe you need Congressman Crawford. I believe you're well capable, and I pledge to you, if you send me to Congress, I will fight to keep the government out of your life so that you have the freedom to turn this country around. 2/3 of us believe this country's headed the wrong way, but I believe you are the ones who can turn it around. And I hope that you've seen the clear difference between Congressman Crawford and I, and you've seen the clear direction that I would like to go. And I hope that you will consider making a decision to vote for me when you go to the polls in November. My website is markwestforcongress.com. You can donate, you can volunteer, but let's get on board and let's do this together, because I believe in you and I believe we can do this.
Mr. West, we thank you. We thank you and Mr. Crawford for your time participating in tonight's debate. A tip of the hat as well to our panel of journalists who came in with the questions. And as always, our appreciation to you for watching. Debate Week continues tomorrow night here on AETN. Good night.
Major funding for Election 2016 AETN debates is provided by AARP Arkansas.